Welcome to the Bourbon Boys. I'm joined by the illustrious Chris Hart. What's up, Chris?
What's up, buddy?
Chris runs a radio show and a podcast and a video. I mean, he's all over the place. What's the name of your situation there, Chris?
Yeah, so I host a show on ESPN in Houston on 97.5 FM called Whiskey Neat. And I interview people. I have a show just like you do, about the same time period, I think. I mean, I think both of our shows kind of coincided around the same start date, give or take.
True, except yours is wildly more popular than mine.
Well, I don't know about that.
Yeah, it is. That's all right, though. So the first thing I ask everybody that comes on the podcast, what was the first pour of whiskey you ever had?
So just to be clear about your question is, what's the first pour of whiskey that I've had that won me over?
Well, whatever you had first. It didn't have to win you over. It could have been just some shit you had in college before you really got into it.
Okay, fair enough. So the first thing that I really remember was Lafroy 18, which is not a bourbon. It's a scotch, right?
So, it doesn't surprise me at all.
Why is... Oh, I love it already. I love it already. What is not... what's so surprising? What's not surprising about it?
Well, you from the beginning struck me as a scotch guy, even when, you know, it was just us admitting stupid-ass groups on Facebook. You were always into scotch.
Yeah, I my first pour... So, I used to be a beer guy back in 2012, 2011, somewhere in there. And it just, as you get older, you start putting on... How old are you, Chad?
Old enough to know better.
Yeah, so...
42.
Okay, so at a certain age... You start putting on a little weight, and I was putting on some weight, and I thought to myself, I need to get off beer and commit to the finer things in life. And I still remember sitting down and buying a full bottle that I was going to drink by myself at the house. And that bottle was, the first bottle was Glenmorangie 10. But the first bottle I bought was Lafroy 18, and I bought it because this girl I was dating, and I've told this story's kind of beat to death, but this girl I was dating, I knew her dad, he hated me. He wasn't a fan of me. Mm-hmm. And he liked scotch. And so I just went and bought a $100 bottle of scotch, Lafroy 18, and sat down at a Thanksgiving with the family. And that was the first time that we actually connected. It was the first time we bonded, and I ended up marrying his daughter and having a few kids with her. So it worked out. But Lafroy 18.
Yeah, I started putting on a little weight when I was like 2 years old. So that never stopped me from drinking beer or bourbon.
Well, man, I still drink quite a bit of beer, but...
Yeah, it was like 70 degrees today in Wisconsin. We grilled out, so I had a few beers, but yeah, I stick mostly to whiskey.
You know what my biggest surprise is? Like, I have been a Chad Huffman fan for quite some time. I really do mean that. Like, I've known you for a while now, at least 5 years. We've never had a disagreement. We've been in a lot of same circles. Well, until recently, we had a little bit of a disagreement, which I'm sure we'll get to. But I've been a fan of yours for a long time, and my assessment is that you've always been a Kentucky boy.
I grew up in Kentucky.
Part of that is Ryan McGuire's fault.
Oh, there's a lot can be blamed on Ryan McGuire when it comes to me.
Well, Ryan is based in California, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
And LFG is very much a Kentucky-style group. And I always, for a long time, like, I've shipped stuff to Ryan, and I guess I just assume at times I forget that he's not based on the East Coast. So it's been interesting, and forgive me, I'm driving home, so tell me if I'm being too loud.
No, you're good. No, you're good. It sounds good. So what's the best whiskey you've ever had? By the way, I'm drinking Prideful Goat right now.
Are you?
Yeah.
It's so awesome, man. I really do appreciate the support. So I always feel like this question is impossible to answer because there are a ton of special pours. Like, literally, I can think of three or four off the top of my head that have meant something emotional to me. You know, Laphroaig 18 is not the best pour I've ever had, but it means something to me. And every time I crack a bottle of it, it warms the heart. You know, I mean, it's not the reason I'm married to my wife, but it's connected to that, right? So, if I had to say the best pour, that's really tough to call, but I'm gonna say one of the more memorable bourbons that I can think of that was just really awesome was opening a bottle of Pappy Van Blankle with Randy Blank at his house. It's weird that the history of bourbon is always Kentucky, but one of the early pioneers of the private barrel program was Randy Blank. He grabbed one of the first barrels, if not the first barrel, of Pappy or Lot Van Winkle Lot B back in 2002 for $35 a bottle. And now those bottles are going for a few thousand, and he couldn't be a nicer guy.
Yeah.
So the emotional connection to that, it's probably not the best bourbon I've ever had, but as soon as you say, like, special pour, what's special, I'm going to say that moment in time with the bottle of Van Winkle Lot B was pretty great.
I mean, that's a question that's meant to arouse a lot of different things. Some people go with the best actual whiskey they've ever had, the best tasting. Some people go with a moment that was very meaningful in their life. So you can go any way you want to.
I mean, the old Wild Turkey tradition, the 15-year, both the import and the domestic, I know there's kind of a divided feeling on which one was better. I personally like the export better, but Wade Woodard, Randy Blank, those legends in the bourbon zeitgeist, those guys prefer the domestic better. But those old traditions, I mean, Wild Turkey is definitely a special pour for me.
Please don't ever bring up Wade Woodard's name on my podcast again.
Oh, that's, you know, it's funny because I never know.
Curse word.
I never know who hates him and who doesn't.
You can just go ahead and assume that everybody does, and then when they tell you they don't, then you're good then.
Then you're safe.
Yeah. He's a very polarizing character.
Very.
So we're going to talk. I want to go into your show now. First of all, I'm going to tell you that I listen to frequently people that are interesting to me that you have on. William H. Macy was probably my favorite person I heard you talk to on the podcast, on the show. Just because I love Shameless. And
oh my God. So let's talk about that for a second. So first of all, that's surprising to hear. Like, I've known you for a long time, and I always just assume, like, you know, our numbers are pretty good. Like, we do pretty well, but I don't really have a lot of deep, in-depth conversations with my bourbon friends about the show.
Yeah.
I always feel like the redheaded stepchild. You know, I talked to Kenny Coleman, who I love. I think Kenny Coleman and Ryan Cecil are great guys. But Fred Minnick asked me to do his virtual bourbon event, and I told him, like, I feel honored to be invited to the cool kids table because I feel like bourbon, and I told this to you in Messenger, I feel like Kentucky has this large voice that everyone listens to. But if you are, even if you have a somewhat reasonably popular following, if you're not from Kentucky, who gives a fuck? Like, no, wait, can we cuss on this?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, it's explicit.
Yeah, so I appreciate that, but you're one of the only bourbon guys within the bourbon world that I've really talked to that has actually listened to the show.
Yeah, I listened to when you have comedians on, like when you had Witherspoon on. That was hilarious. That was great.
Last interview he did.
Yeah, I know. I was dying laughing when he was talking about the wine.
And, oh, my God.
Mostly when you have comedians, and I like the different stuff when it comes to yours. Not listen to many of the whiskey guys.
Well, I mean, listen. The thing is that there are podcasts out there that have established a following for their whiskey reviews. I mean, I saw your review you did on Prideful Goat. ADHD Whiskey, The Bourbon Junkies. There are a ton of, I mean, Bourbon Pursuit, let's not forget. I mean, the impact that they've had is pretty remarkable. There are podcasts out there that are doing reviews, and it feels so, for me to come in late to the game, it feels derivative. So I'd rather have, the tagline on the show is Spirited Conversations with Interesting People. I'd rather have an interesting conversation and discuss, you know, if you have an honest feedback, like John Witherspoon, classic, incredible comedian, I gave him some whiskey and he had a very bad reaction to it because it was so high proof.
Yeah.
And that honest reaction is hilarious. It's great. It's genuine. It's natural. So I try to just, you know, honestly, one of the luckiest moments for me, William H. Macy was my favorite.
Mm.
But in the whiskey world, it's been impossible for people to get Matthew McConaughey on. And when I got him on, it was a huge win. And to just have an honest conversation about Wild Turkey, all the things all the nerds have been wanting to ask him about raising the proof and doing some things that would excite us versus the mesquite finished and this, and, you know what I mean? So it's been really nice being able to have a conversation that was a bit more, you know, like what we're doing now, having a few drinks and just kind of shooting the shit.
Well, I didn't give a shit about his conversation about whiskey, but I did enjoy that interview. All right.
He's not a big whiskey guy, right? He's a celebrity enforcer, right? But that was our opportunity for the whiskey nerds to pitch to him our ideas that I think would be great. I'd love to see a 13-year-old rye from Wild Turkey. I'd love to see them bring back 8101. Now that, you know, a lot of these legacy distillers they have older stocks that, you know, for a long time they were getting rid of age statements, and Wild Turkey or Bean specifically is starting to bring back their older stock. Like, I'd love to see a 13-year-old Russell Reserve or an 8-year 101 come back. Like, so that was our chance to kind of pitch to him the ideas that we think would be great for the whiskey community.
Well, that interview was great for a lot of reasons, and just to have him on there talking about it, frankly, was great.
Well, I appreciate it, man. Like, I said this before, I'm a huge Chad Huffman fan, and to hear that someone that is well-loved within the whiskey community, although divisive at times.
I was going to say, you better ease up on the love part of that, but...
Yeah. Well, listen, everyone that has ever put their name out there is divisive in the bourbon community. Everyone I mentioned so far, Fred Minnick, Kenny Coleman, Ryan Cecil, anytime you put yourself forward, you're going to be met with some cynicism. It's natural. Chad Huffman, Ryan McGuire, no exception. There are people that you know, Bourbon 30, that last episode y'all did with Bourbon 30 was probably the most divisive thing I've fucking seen since Jason Goldberg.
The show, or are you talking about the interview I did with him?
The preview that y'all did at Bourbon 30 in which you saw Jeff Mattingly shit-faced and giving his life a hard time.
So it was a TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a long-ass day, I can tell you that much.
Well, and I think either you or Ryan pointed that out. Like, listen, we drank all day. It's natural for these things to happen. And when you're there all day, you kind of give that person a little bit of credit, and benefit of the doubt of, you know, we've been here all day. But when you're just seeing like a 60-second clip of that YouTube preview, it's a bit more difficult to digest at times. But you know, I've, like I said, I've known you for some time. I've known Ryan, and I've known Jeff to be a bit of a wild card. Okay. So it was fine, but I could also understand the divisiveness. You know,
wild card is a good way to put Jeff. What is your favorite interview? You said you liked Matthew McConaughey, William H. Macy. I know you've had a lot of comedians. You've had a lot of whiskey folks on. What if you could nail down one that you really like the most or enjoy or most impactful, whatever you want to put it?
So this question is very reminiscent of the what's your favorite bourbon question. It's a bit difficult to nail down, but I will tell you that there's one interview that's probably the most I've laughed a long time and the most fun I've had. And it was the only interview I did that had no video. And that was a T.J. Miller episode.
Okay. That was good.
T.J. Miller was the first real celebrity I had on the show. And we had to do it audio only because he couldn't be seen on camera drinking alcohol.
That was after all his problems?
Yeah, he was having some issues. What he referred to as a misunderstanding with the federal government. So we did an audio-only episode, and it was probably the hardest I laughed in a long time. And we've stayed friends since. We text each other. He came back to Houston a couple months ago. We brought a bottle of the Prideful Goat to his show with my sister and her brother-in-law. And after the show, we drank about 80% of the bottle. We opened it there at the Houston Improv, and we almost killed the entire thing. He couldn't be a more silly and intelligent guy. It's one thing to be silly, but it's also one thing to, like, you know, we can have some decent conversation. So
yeah.
If you go back and listen to T.J. Miller on ESPN's Whiskey Neat, you'll laugh. And I haven't heard it in a while, but we laughed pretty hard.
I remember that might have been one of the first episodes I actually listened to of your podcast. That, and you have the other two comedians. I can't remember his name. You had the Brendan, dude. What's that?
Brendan Schaub. Yep. Yeah, Brendan Schaub and Brian Cowan was also a great episode. Brendan's been on my show three times. He's a bit controversial, a figure online. It's kind of amazing how many people watch his show every week just to shit on him. Because personally, we have kids around the same age, and we'll text each other about shoes and kids. Yeah, I've started kind of getting into
your sneakerhead.
Yeah, because I mean, for years, I'm 33, but I've dressed like a dad for years. Plaid shirt. Jeans and like slip-on shoes,
white New Balances.
Oh yeah, like so boring. I have zero style. I met my wife when I was 19, and I pretty much gave up then. I'm not a stylistic guy.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, Brendan sent me some shoes, some like high-end sneakers and stuff, and I've kind of played with it. I've made a few posts about it on Instagram, but it's you know. We've texted so much about our children and about being married and about our families. Brendan could not be a nicer guy, and he is probably the most divisive person. If you go back to his episodes, we had to basically turn off the downvote option for our videos. he has a following of tens of thousands of people who watch everything he does and then goes to Reddit and shit all over him as a person. Shits all over his shows, his episodes, anything he does. They trash him, but they will watch everything he does. Like, he's got the following. They'll listen. The views count.
Sounds like old Howard Stern.
Yeah.
Well, I know Brian Callen's pretty controversial now, too, but I love him from the show Goldbergs. And yeah, then the spinoff from that.
He's on the other side of that. He basically, and for those who don't know, it's funny. So Dave Pickerel from Whistlepig did my show. I was the last interview he did. and he died a week later.
So basically you're saying anybody that comes on your podcast has a good chance of dying a week later.
Dying or being canceled. Because
it's all about John whiskey meat.
John Witherspoon did my show, and he died 2 weeks. I was the last interview John Witherspoon did from, you know, the Friday movies. And he died 2 weeks later.
Exactly.
And then Brian Callen did my show, last interview he did before he got publicly accused of rape and canceled widely. And so it's been a tough couple years for the old Whiskey podcast.
That's why I brought you on this podcast instead of vice versa. So I don't have to worry about getting canceled. I said that's why I brought you on this podcast instead of vice versa, so I didn't have to worry about getting canceled or dying.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, moving on to your current endeavor, the Prideful Goat, which I'm currently drinking. The first iteration that I have, you just released a second one. The first iteration I have is a 15-year-old whiskey. It's 15-year-old, 78.5% corn, 13 rye. I did an interview. I did a review of it. 8.5% barley. Proof's 115. And this is the batch. How many barrels did you put in this?
Yeah, so the first batch was about... The first two batches were both about 1,300 bottles, give or take. They were initially... So this is a great question. I'd love to address this. So the rumor that's being passed around is that a year ago... The only 15-year Kentucky straight bourbon on the market were all totes and they were all Beam. And the thing that I think the bourbon community, my issue with the bourbon community is we live in a bubble. We live in a very tight bubble of mostly the Facebook bourbon world.
Yeah.
So we have a hard time seeing outside that bubble. And a great example of this is the most popular whiskey channel. The most popular following is the Whiskey Tribe. They've got 75 million views between two channels on YouTube and 500,000 subscribers between the two channels.
Never heard of them.
Exactly. That's my point. Now, you have heard of them. You just don't realize you've heard of them.
Okay.
They're the ones who launched the Whiskey Sommelier course that was 2 or 3 days or 4 days and, $3,000 or $4,000 in Austin, Texas. These guys have such an insane following, bigger than anyone could. Just to give you an example, our channel on YouTube, we see a few hundred thousand views a month, and our subscribers are about 12,000. Fred Minnick has probably 15,000 subscribers, one of the most prolific and well-known bourbon writers in the world. His most popular episode is a fraction of these guys. These guys are so popular that they crowdfunded an entire distillery in South Austin. They have a distillery on 30 acres in South Austin, a group of 30,000 members, and are bringing in close to $30,000 a month in Patreon support. This is the most popular whiskey channel in the world. And a lot of the Facebook bourbon community had no idea who they were. And a couple years ago, there was this whole article about the Whiskey Sommelier course and being bullshit. And it was Facebook bourbon guys who just had never heard of them. It was like news to them, and they were so appalled by it. I forgot my point. What was my point?
I was asking about the Prideful Goat, how many barrels you put into it.
Yeah, so my point was this, that the number of brokers out there in the world selling liquid for suppliers is much higher than you think.
Yeah.
And so anyone that's saying, oh, there was only one broker out there selling 15-year-old liquid on the market, that's a weird claim to make. Mm-hmm. Because that assumes that you know all the brokers out there. And all I can speak for is Prideful Goat. And what a lot of people don't realize is that in order to transfer liquid between distilleries, it's called a transfer and bond. If I send barrels to one place, I've got to keep that liquid. I can't change the stencil on the barrel. Mm-hmm. The barrel has to keep the DSP. It has to tell you where it comes from. These things have to be transferred and tracked.
Unless you're Bullet.
Well,
no. I was just joking. I didn't throw that in there.
Let's talk about that. Like, because that's part of the debate.
We'll keep going. Keep going on Prideful Goat, and then we'll touch about the other stuff later.
Oh, I cannot wait. I'm already. This is my favorite interview I've ever done. So my point is that I can only speak for the Prideful Goat, and I can tell people that the paperwork that I have does not say that it's Beam Liquid. And so there are other brands that have flat out said that the liquid that they have is Beam. Mm-hmm. And it's all the same mash bill. It's all 15 year. The assumption so far from the bourbon community is that it's all from one broker. It's all from the same source. And I think that's where a lot of the fighting is. Mash bills are a dime a dozen. I can tell you right now that on Friday, the last 2 weeks, I've been in the midst of purchasing, I'll flat out say it, 300,000 gallons of double-digit age-stated Kentucky bourbon from a legacy distiller. The in that discussion is, where does it come from? Where does it come from, and can I advertise it to where it comes from? Right? So yeah. I can only speak for the Prideful Goat, and I can say that our paperwork does not say Beam.
But you could see where people would come to that conclusion, especially after they see what the mash bill is, and if they're trying to figure it out, I mean, that's going to be the closely resembled mash bill to what's on there will be Knob Creek.
Of course.
Right. I'm not saying that's what it is, because I don't know, and I honestly don't give a shit what's in it. Unless you're trying to sell me MGP and it's Dickel, I don't care what it is.
So to be clear, I can absolutely understand why some people are coming to the conclusion that they're coming to. For instance, Kenny and Ryan, I've talked to them. They're convinced that the bullet barrels are from Four Roses because it tastes similar.
And Kenny, you could tell Kenny to suck my dick.
Oh, you're not a fan?
No. He shit on me early in his podcast, and I don't... He never apologized directly to me. He had somebody else apologize to me, and I don't appreciate that.
Well, I'm not aware.
That's fine. I would assume you wouldn't be aware.
Yeah. You know, honestly, the most drama I've been in the past 5 years has been in these small costless shipping groups. I mean, TCS was probably the biggest pain in the ass. That's a different conversation altogether. Everything else I try to just avoid because the bourbon community is so involved and so cynical and so gossiping that it's hard to just kind of exist and not get shit all over.
Well, I want to get back to actually how many barrels did you put in the first batch? You said 1,800 right, bottles?
So I'm getting to that. So essentially what happened was...
Well, hurry up, Chris. Jesus Christ, this is only a half hour. Well, we're going to be like an hour podcast tonight.
They're called tangents, and both of us are on several of these.
Yeah, sure.
No, so when we originally found the liquid, it was in barrels. It wasn't in totes. Mm-hmm. And historically, when you buy lots of barrels from somebody... A lot of times it's take it or leave it, and sometimes if you order 150 barrels, some of them might show up empty, and you already paid for them because you paid a flat rate per barrel.
True.
So the distillery that we did all this through and are working with is distillery called Gulf Coast Distilling. It's the largest distillery west of Mississippi. And he didn't want to pay as much as we bought, and we bought a lot, several dozen totes. We specifically said, dump them into totes and we'll pay a flat rate fee. And that's exactly also what we did this past week when we were talking about purchasing this bulk liquid from a legacy distiller. Originally, it was pitched to us that there were 1,000 barrels available, and we said, no, dump it. We can rebarrel it here if we want to. And so what's happened is...
So you save money on shipping when you do it, when you do it totes?
Yep, you save money. You do it in totes. It's an absolute number, so there's no surprises. And the liquid that was purchased was toted. So each tote is 1,000 liters, which comes out to about 1,300 bottles. That could be 4 barrels per tote. That could be 5 barrels per tote, depending on what liquid was in there. So the first batch of the goat was one tote. The second batch was a separate tote. We just released it one batch at a time to get it out to the Dallas and Houston market, and then the second batch went to all of Texas. And we've got plans in the future for the goat moving forward that should have us pretty set up the next couple of years. But so to answer your question, I don't know how many barrels. It was one tote's worth, which could be 4 barrels, it could be 5 barrels.
How many bottles was it? 1,800?
1,300.
1,300, so... 200 bottles, average, 150. I mean, you can guess now that you know what the bottle count is, and it's on the, I think it's on the barrel, the bottle anyway, isn't it?
Yes, it's on the bottle. How many, you know, bottle number of each one? And there's, I think, 1330 for the first one, maybe 1310 for the second one.
So, how did this all come about with doing it with, Whiskey Pete, oh, your guy, and Bourbon Real Talk.
So I, you know, from the beginning of time, I've worn a few hats.
I've known that.
When this whole thing first started, I started a whiskey festival and a marketing company here in Houston, and we would basically consult and work with brands on marketing to people. Well, that same year, a few months later, the Houston Bourbon Society was started by a guy named Matt Phillips. And Matt was coming to my events and coming to my things that I was putting together, tastings and all those things. This is back in 2015 or 2016. 2015. And we were promoting the group at our events. And so the group was growing at a pretty substantial rate. And eventually he came along probably 4 or 5 months in and just said, hey, I was in the group probably within the first, I think it was either 5 or 6 days. So within the first week of the group's existence, I was like in the top 27 people that were invited. I was a founding member. And I was doing so much to promote the group that he eventually came along and said, hey, do you want to help run the group? And so I took over the Houston Bourbon Society within the first 4 months of its existence. And we've been growing it ever since. We've had all of my whiskey festival, the Houston Whiskey Social, all of the marketing dinners and tastings and events and stuff we've done existed before the group. And then, of course, I've been building this Facebook group. And now, this sounds such like a catchphrase, but... we're the largest single market group in North America. There is no single group larger than this group. And it's about 11,000 members focused on Houston, with a few exceptions to either brand managers, all the people, you know, like there's a local Texas guy for Buffalo Trace.
Mm-hmm.
And so for my whiskey event, I contact the Houston guy. But for barrel... At the time, there was a national guy, William Schragas.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we wanted to do something in Houston with Barrel, we would have to do it with Will, who was based out of New York. So our group allowed people to join the group that were out of state if they represented brands, or if there were some admins of some sister groups, some national groups that we wanted to potentially do something with, we would invite them. But the vast majority of the group, 98% of the group, is all Texas-based, Houston-focused, single market, 11,000 members. And I think last year we did something like 2,000 cases and 60 single barrels and beer projects and everything. That no one is doing is more than this specific group. So eventually that led to us doing a show on ESPN. And then from ESPN, I wanted to start doing barrel projects for my whiskey event. But here's the thing. If you do a barrel pro with Russell's Reserve, you don't have to front money. You don't send money to Russell's Reserve or to Wild Turkey. You normally, in the early days, you'd have to convince the store to take it and convince them that it would sell. You wouldn't have to front the money. There are some groups out there fronting money, but we've never done that. We've never fronted money. But we wanted to do bigger and bigger projects, but some of the projects required upfront cash. So I started doing barrel selections for my whiskey festival, and I'll pay for it, create my own brand, front of the money, do it through the event. People can taste single barrel four square or at cash strength, which isn't really available in Texas, unfiltered. We're working on a cognac right now, and of course what eventually became the Prideful Goat. The Prideful Goat started off as a barrel pick. And barrel stickers, everyone's doing them.
True.
Everyone's doing a barrel sticker, and honestly, the vast majority of them are fucking nauseating.
And some people are dipping
yep.
Tubes,
I already know what you're about to
tubes
say,
and wax
you're
now.
Absolutely right. Some people are making money on them.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. I was talking about the taterism, but they've been making money on it for a long time.
But that's the thing. So anything we did for Houston, we never made any money on it. None of our picks were money makers. They were never our prerogative. And that's prerogative for some people, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Sometimes it feels a little dirty, but there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, liquor stores, that's why they're doing them, so that they can make money. Why is one more shady than the other? And so,
as long as you're being honest about it, it's not shady either way.
I agree. We're on the same page. But here's the thing. I love this group. And, you know, like for years, for years it was just me paying the money for our stickers and our waxing and whatever we did. I fronted the cost, and I never got that money back. And when Todd came along, Todd fronted a lot of the money, and it's just out of the kindness of his heart. If we do a barrel pick, he designs the sticker. He'll pay for the sticker. Sometimes I'll pay for the sticker. But I'm not fronting $45,000 for a fucking Facebook group and not making money on it because my wife would leave me.
She wouldn't leave you. You got too many damn kids.
Yeah.
She's
yeah,
getting
I can't
mad.
Afford any of that. So we started a company. We already had the company in place. We've got a couple of LLCs in place for the last 6 years, but we started bottling spirits for our whiskey festival, and we're also going to be launching the Agave Social once COVID lifts. So we'll be doing Mexican-based spirits. But really, we just wanted to do cool projects that weren't the same five barrel picks that everyone else is doing. And if we're going to front the money for it, we should make a reasonable markup. And here's the thing. Our pricing is the cheapest in North America. Any independent bottler out there, they're not cheaper than us. We don't have a facility. We don't have sales reps. The number of hands in the cookie jar, so to speak, are minimized. Everything we're doing is cheaper than everyone else. And so we get to do the cool stuff and also do it cheaper than anyone else. I mean, I love Kenny and Ryan, but you know, I don't know their structure or their business or anything, but they're, you know, the whiskey's expensive.
Yes.
And the Prideful Goat is the cheapest out of any other brand that's doing the 15-year-old, you know, rumor has it, same Nashville, rumor has it, same source, nothing out there is cheaper than the goat. And so the idea of being reasonably priced and doing cool projects that are outside the norm is a passion that we all have, all of us. Anyone that's in this game that's doing picks wants to do something unique and not be a huge, you know, bank breaker.
I don't know about that. I think there's some people out there that don't mind being a huge bank breaker. We're not going to mention any names, but...
That's fair. You're right.
Anybody that's a real whiskey person, you're correct. That would be their thought process.
So, you know, and here's the thing about it is our selling point on it is pretty straightforward. There's no hype. Hey, man, we started bottling this 15-year-old liquid. We did nothing to it. It's not our talent. We did nothing to it. But it's at the cheapest price you can get. So if you like Doc Swenson's, here you go. At, you know, the first release, I think, was $60 cheaper than Doc Swenson's. The second release was $40 cheaper than Doc Swenson's. So that's the selling pitch. We're not saying we're the best. We're not a hype beast. No one's wearing, you know, sparkly outfits trying to push this shit. It was an instant sellout both times. So we're just, it's cheap. It's great liquid. And objectively, in this market, for 15-year-old Kentucky bourbon from a legacy distillery, it's totally worth $100.
I'm pretty sure I saw Randall Sullivan wearing a sparkly outfit at the release.
Another device character. He couldn't be a nicer guy.
No, I like him.
I've known him for a while now, and me and him have had many conversations about the divisiveness of his persona. He really is so easy to work with. Super, you know, if you're thinking something, you can just say it and kind of talk through it and not let your feelings get in the way. It's super reasonable. I really can't say enough about him. I'll tell you what I think it is about him that is so controversial.
I don't even know there was controversy when it comes to him.
Oh, super really? Controversial. And he'll be the first one to admit it. All of his podcasts and all of his production is really trying to appeal to a new drinker that's learning about the hobby. So any of us old dogs, us cynical assholes who know that the new Willet is garbage and the old Willet is God and all of these things that we love to just shit on and write off, his content isn't for us. You know, he'll do an episode on whiskey terms.
Yeah, I did one of those.
That's not for us. We don't give a shit about whiskey terms. We know what they are, and anyone who doesn't know what a tater is a tater, right? Like, that's the... So, Wade blocked him, so what does that tell you?
I love him. He's my new best friend now. I didn't know that.
to go back to the Prideful Goat... Randall did an interview with Carlos de Aldecoa from Gulf Coast and found out that he had some 15-year-old liquid that he was bringing in. And I had heard that he had some 15-year-old liquid. Randall came to me and said, hey, I just did an interview with him. We should do barrel picks. Well, when we did the discussion over barrel picks, any club can do a barrel. But then we found out that they were toted. Well, it's a little bit nerve-wracking to think that a club, at the time, this was back at the beginning of COVID, It's a bit nerve-wracking to think that any club could possibly handle 1,300 bottles of a tote.
Yeah.
So we worked together, and we invited members of both clubs, and this wasn't even a club pick. Randall did it for his podcast. I did it for my podcast/radio show. And we did it together, but then we invited members of our club to taste it and get their input. And, you know, friends that we've met in the community. And we selected the ones we loved out of, you know, we tried like 8 or 9 totes. And each tote was a blend of 5 or 6 barrels. So each tote was essentially a large barrel pick. And I said, well, let's make a brand out of it. And we did. We created a brand. I worked with a designing company. I designed the label. I came up with the name Prideful Goat. I mean, top to bottom, I handled everything, and Randall and I marketed both to our groups and our followings, and I mean, as a collaborative team, our teams created something that was successful. But of course, there's no disillusion about it. It's still 15-year-old Kentucky bourbon. Like, we didn't really have to do anything. We just had to put it in a bottle. So there's no bragging here. It's more like, hey, we literally found a diamond in the rough, and we put it in a bottle, and then we sold it. It spoke for itself.
I still need to get a sample of the second batch.
I'll send you one. I don't know how many bottles I have left. I grabbed 3 cases of the first batch, and I only grabbed 1 case of the second batch, and I've sent a few bottles out into the zeitgeist. One to Cameron Monahan from Shameless, and one to Brennan Schaub, and there's one going to Fred Minnick. If it hasn't been mailed now, it'll be mailed soon. But
who's Cameron? Which one's Cameron?
Cameron Monahan is the redhead from Shameless.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Yeah, he was in Gotham and the Star Wars game.
I just finished that while I'm on the new ones where the end of the series. It's sort of been my new binge thing. I watched it early on and I couldn't get into it, and then I just got into it recently when there wasn't anything else to watch, and then it's like, that show's really damn good.
You mean Gotham or you mean Shameless?
Shameless.
Yeah, Shameless is so good.
So, go ahead.
I was going to say, Cameron's a gay guy.
Yes.
He's a gay son.
Yeah, I remember that, but he's not gay in real life, but yeah, he's a gay in the show.
No.
Him and Nikki.
In fact, he's dating a dime piece.
Yeah, I know. I've seen that. I saw that on there. They put that shit on whatever those quick things that get you to click them on Facebook. And but anyway, let's move on to the final topic of the night. You and I have recently had discussions about the fact that your online persona has changed a little bit. In my opinion, you don't feel that way. I've had some people in Speakeasy, Wisconsin, contact me because they know that we know each other, and voice some concerns, or not concerns, but just sort of like, this guy's getting on my nerves. And it's mostly surrounding the Four Roses.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. I would assume you're probably talking about Jeff Schwartz.
No. That wasn't the guy that reached out to me. Thing.
So I've had a good friend that's been in the bourbon community for a long time, local here in Houston.
Yeah.
And he has expressed to me, I mean, 5 years ago, a similar mindset. And everyone that is well known in the community, yourself, Ryan, I literally, you could just name, the list goes on and on and on. We've all at some point been a bit abrupt or jocular or cynical or shitty, depending on what group it's in.
Let's try not to use big words because I don't know what you're talking about. Jocular, I assume, means, you know, short, but other than that.
No. Jocular means like joking, but it can be hard to tell. Like,
you used that in a voice message with me earlier. I was like, what the hell is this fool talking about? Okay. I assume it's this.
Yeah, so it means like being facetious or being, I'm joking. It means I'm joking. So, but it can be hard to tell at times. So, the example that you're referring to that you brought up to me, so you and I got into a disagreement for the first time ever in Speakeasy, Wisconsin, about my Four Roses article.
Yeah.
And it was a misunderstanding, and I tried to repeatedly make clear that I'm not being shitty. And eventually, I think you kind of backed off a little bit. Here's the thing. When you're having a debate online, it's totally understandable for you to react a certain way depending on what you're reading. Like, oh, I read this this way, or I took this way. Mm-hmm. That's normal. But once someone adds context and says, no, that's not what I meant. What I'm really saying is this, you're supposed to reshape your initial reaction. But a lot of times that's not what happens. A lot of times when I'll give you a great example that I kind of say jokingly, because my wife is not like this, and she's amazing. But if my wife says something and I say, oh, that outfit, like, you look really good today. And she goes, well, did I not look good yesterday? I said, no, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying you look really good today. And there's this thing that happens sometimes when you're in relationships, whether it's with friends or a significant other, that they don't decide to back off. They decide to think, nope, it's too late. I'm already offended. I'm deciding to stay mad.
Dig in. They want to dig in.
Yeah, it's like, I'm so incensed by what you said. You're saying this, that's not what you meant, but I don't care. I'm already upset, so I'm going to be upset. That happens in bourbon quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
To be clear, I'm the type of person that whenever anything gets spread throughout the bourbon zeitgeist, I am going to dig in and find out the truth. Like I'm not going to just believe. I'll give you a great example. For a long time, people were saying that Eagle Rare, when they made the switch from 10-year single barrel to 10-year not single barrel, that the only reason why it wasn't a single barrel was because the...
Don't worry about it. Keep going. Yep.
Yeah, so what people were saying for a while is that when Eagle Rare made the switch that it was no longer single barrel, that it was only kind of technically not a single barrel. So what was happening was is whenever they were bottling it in the bottling line, they would do it one barrel at a time, but the liquid would kind of, between barrels, would kind of, whatever was left in the pipe might blend with the next barrel, so it technically wasn't a single barrel. And that perpetuated throughout the bourbon community for a long time. And it turns out that that is completely made up. That no one said this. And so I reached out to Buffalo Trace, and they said, well, no, that's not true. Everything now is batched, but it's single barrel profile batch, meaning what they do is they blend multiple barrels. It could be 20 barrels. It could be 40 barrels. But they taste it against samples of single barrel to make sure it's pretty similar, which is a different story altogether. So there's all these rumors that abound within the bourbon community. And what was perpetuating was that, and look, I'm going to give a little dig at Bourbon Pursuit, but people were perpetuating, oh, we just did a bullet pick, and I'm just letting you know, it tasted very similar to an OESV I once had, which is such fucking bullshit. And what I hate about it is anyone in the bourbon community can develop a following of thousands of people with no accreditation, right? Like you can develop, the Bourbon Junkies are a great example. Two of the greatest guys, huge following, 60,000 subscribers. Their channel has a few million views. They could say anything. It doesn't matter. And anything they say will be with an authority. And so this rumor was abounding from stores posting their single barrel picks from Bullet to bourbon community posting information about this and saying it's a single barrel bullet pick that's really Four Roses. And I thought, well, hold on. This doesn't make any sense. There's several reasons that this doesn't add up, but let me dig deep. I work for ESPN. I'm what you would consider by every measure a journalist. Let me reach out to, and my whiskey festival, I work with the same people. If we're doing a single barrel pick for my whiskey festival, well, Mandy's the person, right? So you call Mandy, it's the same. I'm already working with these people in other avenues in the many hats that I wear, so why don't I just reach out? I'll talk to Bullet's main person. I'll talk to Four Roses' main person, because I know the local Four Roses rep is pissed. He's really pissed that people keep saying that this is Four Roses when it's not. And so I'm hearing that they're sending it to Bullet and Tankers and blah, blah, blah. So I actually go up to Four Roses and I'm there for a barrel selection. I talk to Mandy about it and I literally see about 150 empty barrels. It was the day that they were dumping these barrels, bottling them or tanking them for Diageo to send over to Diageo to use for Bullet. I mean, I'm looking at these barrels. They say DG on them, which means I know that at the very least, Four Roses is still, even though the contract ended in 2015, 2016, somewhere in there, that they're still maturing liquid that was contract distilled for Bullet. So I reach out to Mandy. I'm there. I was there in person. She says, yeah, this is still liquid. We still mature for them, but we stopped contract. We are no longer distilling since 2015. But the liquid that they already distilled before that is still aging here. It's only about 4 or 5 years old. So they dump it, they tank it, they send it away. I said, well, hold on. You don't send them barrels? No, we don't send them barrels. It's cheaper to transport. And that's coming from someone who also, as I already mentioned earlier in the podcast, we just secured tens of thousands of gallons of Kentucky bourbon for the Prideful Goat. It's not coming to us in barrels. That quantity doesn't feasibly make sense to ship in barrels. You send it via 18-wheeler in a tanker. So I reach out to her, and I tell them both. I want to. This rumor's abounding within the bourbon community. Let's sit down. Let's collaborate with both of you and get both sides' feedback. Because it was no secret that Four Roses was distilling for Diageo. There's no reason for any one of them to lie. It's common knowledge. And I talked to Brent Elliott about it myself in person, face-to-face. It's not a secret. Everyone knows that Four Roses was distilling for Diageo. So I reach out to both, and I ask them every question I can think of. Do you send it to them in barrels? Have you ever sent it to them in barrels? I asked Diageo, your standard label, is it just Four Roses or do you blend it with other things? So we've always blended with multiple distilleries. Well, this barrel program, these barrels are pretty good, about 104 proof, single barrels from a single distillery, 10 different recipes. Sounds pretty familiar. Well, they said, well, of course, at one point in time, not that long ago, Bullet and Four Roses were owned by the same company. That 10 recipe thing was designed when they were still the same company. Now, Four Roses, of course, we're still relatively new, right? Like, even though we've gotten into it the last 10 years, there's some people who've been in it for 20 years that are really involved in 20 years. Mm-hmm. Well, not that long ago, they were the same company. This Four Roses to us freshmen, is they're the ones that pioneered the 10 recipes. Well, it actually goes back a little further than that. So at the very least, it's clear they're at least trying to mimic it or copy it. Let's be honest about it. It's clearly a marketing ploy.
Plus, a lot of times you go there to do a barrel pick and the people that are there or the sales reps that are selling for Diageo are actually telling you that they are Four Roses.
So here's the thing about that. So you made two claims during our original disagreement. The original claim was that you've had friends that said that they've seen barrel heads that showed Four Roses.
Well, I have a picture of it now. He sent it to me after I talked to you.
Yeah, so the other claim was that when you go there to do picks, that the sales reps at Diageo are telling you it's Four Roses. Mm-hmm. So I those are personal accounts. I can't discredit those.
Yeah.
No one can discredit those. You can say, I saw it, my neighbor saw it, these things happened. I can't. All I know from my understanding is that when you go to Bullet, the person that leads every single barrel tasting is Melissa Rift. And I talked to Melissa Rift. I'm friends with Melissa Rift. Melissa hates that this question keeps coming up, and she hates that the rumor keeps persisting. She is so fucking adamant that both off the record and on the record, it's not just one thing to say one thing to the public eye and one thing behind the scenes. She's so adamant that she's the only one that leads these tastings, and she keeps telling everybody that it's not Four Roses. And both to my personal email, when I initially asked, long before the rumor about it, as soon as Bullet started doing pics, I asked her and she told me no. And then when I posted about it, a bunch of other people shared their screenshots from their email exchanges with Melissa saying it's not Four Roses. So the only thing we have as far as visual evidence that's being shared is that it's not Four Roses. She's saying it's not Four Roses. The barrel heads that have been shared in threads on Bourboner and all these different groups, Bourbon Nation and HBS and all of the people that could actually, that were there and they saw the barrel heads, it's all been other distilleries, not Four Roses. And now it's been similar recipes, like instead of OESV, one was like EBSV or something. Like it was a similar four-coded thing. And I know for sure two of the distilleries, based off the barrel heads I've seen and some stuff that was said to me by a certain person within Barrel or Bullet, and the two recipes of the two distilleries that they confirmed weren't Four Roses either. For the life of me, I don't understand why there's a conspiracy to flat out lie about this so passionately. And that's not to say that big brands don't lie. I fully acknowledge that.
We're talking about Diageo.
What's that?
That's what we're talking about, Diageo. So they're known for not being the most transparent.
They're the big bad wolf. We all know they're the big bad wolf, for sure. And I believe that. But what I don't understand is why would Four Roses lie? And also, Four Roses this year, and someone could correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know if it was this year or last year. But for years, Four Roses single barrel program was 600 barrels a year, and I think it's now 1,000 barrels. They are doing everything they can just to keep up with demand. Why would Four Roses continually sell liquid in single barrel format, multiple recipes, their full tin menu, when they're having trouble keeping up with demand, where they can make more money selling it themselves under their own label?
Well, the flip side of that coin would have been if they bought it a long time ago before it was this big.
Great question. You're absolutely right. The question remains, what if the only thing that makes sense, what if they sent single barrels in the past to Bullet, and now they came to age currently? What doesn't make sense about that is, one, both are denying it. Two, they're currently sending 4-, 5-, and 6-year-old bulk liquid to Bullet as fast as they can from the Bullet stocks. Fred Minnick, by the way, I give him credit. There are times that he does know things. I mean, there's a reason why he's so prolific. He does have a following. He does say things that surprise me. There have been things that, many things that Fred, I have nothing but love for Fred. As far as I know, Fred's not claiming this is Four Roses distillate, and I'd be utterly, utterly shocked. I'll tell you what, on April Fool's, Fred announced an article that he was getting into the cryptocurrency space, and I believed that for a split second before I would believe that Fred thought that this was Four Roses liquid. I would be utterly shocked.
But he did call the latest Mythical NBC a honey barrel. Just FYI.
Say it again?
He did call the latest Mythical NBC a honey barrel.
What's NBC?
National Barrel Company.
Oh, NBC. Yeah. I said M as in Mike.
No.
I mean, there's lots of things I don't necessarily agree with Fred on, but I when it comes to historical facts or industry things, I don't know. There's not often times that I see him flat out wrong. If he hears something, he hears something. Except for this Beam liquid thing. I know he thinks it's Beam, but that's not, I can't speak for the brands, but I know for sure Prideful Goat's not Beam. But going back to the Four Roses thing, so my only thing with that article was to just, no one had done this. No one had reached out to both brands to ask them all of the questions the community's been asking. And I thought I would put it to rest by asking every question that was answered or asked. And I did. I asked every question and got a full So a collaborative statement from both brands. How often do both brands work together in a collaborative statement? They both came together. And to watch the tomfoolery and chicanery and the conspiracy nutheads abound was utterly stroke-inducing.
Tomfoolery and chicanery.
I love Jeff Schwartz. Jeff Schwartz has done quite a bit in the bourbon community. But when he made the argument that someone at a trade show told him it was Four Roses, I almost had a stroke then too. Like, Jeff is a great guy. He's extremely intelligent. But for you to say that you heard something at a trade show, the fact that you don't know that a trade show is oftentimes lower tier, and that's not lower tier in terms of status. I just mean they're not involved in the bulk buying game from a brand. Just because someone works for a brand, I'll give you a great example. I went to Jack Daniels one day. I went to Woodford Reserve one day, and I went to a tour at Woodford Reserve, and the person giving the tour said that all bourbon has to be 2 years old. But we know that to be factually incorrect.
Yeah.
And so just because she works for Woodford does not mean that she is involved in that level to understand what she's saying. So when I hear that a local rep, which could be a trade show person, which is often referred to as a poor girl, which I think is a bit misogynistic, but the idea that they're an hourly employee, that their sole job is to pour at these events, or...
Poor wench.
Even a... What?
Poor wench. That's what I refer to it as. Even more misogynistic.
Yep. Or if you are even a local sales rep, even if you're in charge of an entire state, that you're not involved in the selling and buying of bulk liquid for your brand. That doesn't, just because you work as a state manager does not mean you have any fucking clue what you're talking about. So there was all these rumors of people like, well, I heard this from this person. Well, who's that person? Well, they work for the brand. Well, what do they do for the brand? So my goal, the arguing or bickering, I've been bickering with people like we all have. The bickering's been going on for years. It hasn't been just recently. As you said, big timing people. The bickering's happened for all of us for a long time. If something sounds crazy, any of us would push back on it. And so I might come across a bit succinct at times, like I did that speakeasy thing. And Jeff and you, for the most part, was a very civilized discussion. But for a brief moment, it came across the wrong way, and you were like, "Well, hold on now." And I tried to make it clear. I understand it may have come across a certain way, but it was intended this way, not that way.
Well, we had a conversation separately through PM that cleared that up. Because
yeah.
I didn't assume that you were, well, it felt that way, but at the same time, I didn't, that from the interactions we've had before, I thought that was out of character for you, so we talked about it later. But to get back to, you can understand, though, why those two brands, even if they're telling the truth, people could see why they may not believe it in whole, because they have nothing to gain by telling the truth.
So here's the thing. So a couple times...
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not saying you're wrong, by the way. I do think... I think that the recipes are very similar, and they taste very similar, and they could be contract distilled. Maybe they are by somebody else. It's just doing the same similar situation and different recipes slightly. But I see where the disconnect comes with people that are seeing the similarities from the outside looking in.
Yeah, so a couple times during this conversation, you've mentioned you can see where this is coming from. And the answer to that is most often yes. I understand 10 similar recipes, with 2 mash bills and 5 yeast. I understand why people are making the connection. It would be unreasonable for me to come to that conclusion that I didn't understand. But that's where you need to take a step back. You need to look at all things considered. Talk to both parties.
I'm not known for taking steps back.
The other party says that I can't discuss it. I mean, for sure. But here's the thing, and I've said this before. In science, you start at zero. Nothing is true until you can prove it's true. And in bourbon, it's important for us to understand that nothing is true until you, oh, a lot of people were asserting it's Four Roses because my local liquor store said it was Four Roses. And I'm going to trust them over you. Yeah. But what fucking clue? And here's the thing. Let me be colorful for a minute. And I tend to be colorful at times. What fucking clue does your distributor or local liquor store have any fucking clue whether or not it's Four Roses liquid or not? They have no fucking clue. Mm-mm. Everyone is making the assumption because they knew there was a relationship before. They see the 10 recipes. They're connecting the dots. And that's reasonable to do. But when you know that Four Roses is tanking liquid to send to them, and the Barrelheads, here's the thing that was also missed, and I went back and looked at our little disagreement. Barrelheads, you can't, those stay intact. The information on when it's barreled, where it's barreled from, those things stay on the Barrelhead. Now you could, a distiller could change it, but it would be a new barrel.
Or flip it.
You're not supposed to do it. It's illegal. You'd have to pay taxes on the new liquid that came out of nowhere. But you can do a transfer and bond between distillers, but that stuff is tracked. So you know, and here's the other thing. I have seen and shared pictures at Bullet where they hadn't sanded off the heads yet. And the only thing I've seen, because you can send me a picture of any head barrel head you want. Doesn't mean that you're at Bullet. Doesn't mean it's in Bullet's warehouse. None of those things.
I'll send you a picture of plenty of heads.
I mean, send me a picture of heads at Bullet.
I wasn't talking about those heads. I was talking about some other heads. That was a joke. Sorry.
Say it again.
I said I was talking about some other heads. You know.
Oh, I see.
It was a sexual joke. It didn't work out too well for me.
That's some LFG shit right there. So my thing is, I am fully open to the idea that it's Four Roses. I am, and this is the most important thing to take away of our 76-minute conversation. I am fully open to the idea that anything is anything, but I'm not going to believe it based off, oh, my neighbor saw it. Or my neighbor was I've heard this in arguments too. My neighbor was a master distiller, and he says that only bourbon can come from Kentucky and the Bourbon County, Kentucky. No, none of that shit makes sense. So I'm open to anything. The only thing I have to go on, the only thing that article is trying to provide is, hey, man, I talked to literally the top tier person at Bullet. The guy in charge of all of Bullet before it becomes Diageo, before that company goes to the parent company. I talked to Brent Elliott. I talked to Mandy Vance, the head of the barrel program, who is the person responsible for liquid being dumped. That facility is hers. I talked to those people. Everyone involved is so beyond irritated that we keep asserting, oh, nope, it's definitely Four Roses. Well, here's the thing. Most of Four Roses distillate, the barrel picks, are under 110 proof. They've even had some that were under 100 proof that they wouldn't let the barrel picking team take because all single barrel Four Roses has to be over 100 proof because their 100 proof skew is a different thing altogether. So you're good at the. Let's just assume the average is 110 proof for Four Roses, and I've done probably a dozen barrel picks of Four Roses, and all of them were about 110 or less. If this Bullet liquid is Four Roses, that means that Four Roses is selling it to Bullet below what they could sell it directly to the market for. They're creating their own competitor at $20 cheaper for slightly lower proof. Now, if you look at an actual cost model of distillate at the supplier level, the difference in cost between 110 proof and 104 proof is nothing. It's negligible. By no means does it translate to $20 or $25 cheaper at the retail level. And for Four Roses to just go through a price increase to $80 once they rolled out the small batch select, they moved the single barrel up to $80 and slotted their, they back slotted the small batch select, or small batch select to $60. For them to sell all 10 recipes when they themselves, when you go to Barrel Picks, not all 10's available, like 6 are available, 8's available on a good day. For them to sell it to Bullet for lower all 10 recipes and for Bullet to put it on the shelf at $20 cheaper for slightly lower proof does not fundamentally make any fucking sense whatsoever. It makes zero sense. I give you another, I've mentioned it a couple times. We have just secured an insane amount of liquid through a legacy distiller for the Prideful Goat. And it's not cheaper than what they're currently selling a certain SKU on, which is what we've always known for years for anyone who sources liquid. Anyone who sources liquid is going to be more expensive than the source itself.
Unless it's MGP.
What's that?
I said, unless it's MGP.
Well, even then, I mean, Pinhook is selling 4-year MGP rye for $80.
Well, that's Pinhook.
But who is selling
Smooth Ambler?
As the same as it, because even MGP is struggling selling stuff under their own brand. Remus is struggling.
Smooth Ambler's selling it as cheap or cheaper than Remus for the same age.
Yeah, so what age did Smooth Ambler buy it at?
They bought it at New Make, I think, when they let it sit there and age.
Yeah. So let me change my stance. No independent bottler is buying aged stock.
Okay.
For cheaper than New Make's a different conversation altogether.
Well, I had some other topics I was gonna go over with you, but we're like an hour and a half, so go ahead.
Oh, it's your call, man. I'm sitting in my driveway. We can keep talking.
No, we'll cut it off here, and then we can pick it up and talk another. I'll have you on for another episode. If you can stand it.
Well, let me address lastly the change in personality thing you mentioned.
Well, that was going to be my last thing, but I figured it was going to take longer than I wanted to go into it for. But that's all right. Go ahead.
I don't think anything that you've noticed recently, and I think there's a difference between noticing and there actually being a change.
Good point.
My show has been on ESPN for 3 years. We just hit the 3-year mark. And people have been commenting, you know, friends like you, commenting that sometimes it can be a bit abrasive.
Confrontational.
Since the entire 5 years, 6 years I've been in the bourbon committee, I don't think I'm a dick, but it's hard to explain, but the moments that you see me being a little bit abrasive to me are moments that are a bit mind boggling, right? Like a great example. And this is not a political statement of where I land on masks.
Yeah. I remember hearing this. I remember hearing this audio from you left me on my messenger.
Oh, did I already send this or say this?
You did, but not on the podcast.
So there's this guy named Matt Chow that owns a buffet, and they're on the front of their, in Texas, we lifted the mask mandate.
Mm-hmm.
But his restaurant, most businesses will at least encourage at the door that you wear a mask, but not really. Some enforce it, some don't. And this is not a statement on whether I endorse masks or don't endorse. None of that's the point. But this woman sent him a message through their business page and just said, "Oh, I see that you are enforcing masks, and I hadn't been there in a while, and I wanted to come support your business, but I saw that you're forcing masks. And masks are an oppression, like a brainwashing thing, and she's an anti-masker. And so I'm not coming to your restaurant because I'm anti-mask and your restaurant is forcing us to wear masks." And he responded to her and said, well, we're not forcing masks. We have the encouragement that you should wear masks, but we're not forcing it. But, you know, why go out of your way to message me on Facebook just to tell me that you're against masks? And she posted this whole thing about, like, oh, look at the flu numbers versus this. And it's a whole conspiracy thing, right? So my point is that a reasonable person would see this exchange and think that this is nonsense. What the fuck is your point that you're going out of your way to espouse mask conspiracy theories to a business owner who's just trying to survive? And a lot of times in the bourbon community, it feels that way, where you say something and that article was just presenting, hey, this is the only time both companies have come together to make a collaborative statement. Here is the statement. And then to watch people take it apart and just say, oh, no, big companies lie all the time, so it's got to be a lie. But where are you getting this from? Where are you getting that it's Four Roses? Like, the only people saying it's Four Roses are people who wouldn't know for sure unless they heard from someone who knew, and the people that knew are saying it's not. So it's just, I don't know if you've noticed, but my hair is not super luscious, right? Like, it's falling out. I'm getting older. I'm starting to thin a little bit. It makes me want to pull out what little hair I have left to have some of these conversations with people who are just unreasonable.
I'm not sure you could get a good grip on it, even if you wanted to pull it out.
Say that again?
I said I'm not sure you could get a good grip on it, even if you wanted to pull it out.
Yeah, as greasy as it is.
Yeah. Well, as short as it is, it'd be kind of tough.
As short as it is. Yeah, it's just, it's one of those things that it's, I think you, and this is just my assessment, I could be wrong, but the only time you and I have ever had a disagreement was a few months ago on Speakeasy.
Yeah.
And then recently you saw my comment about Harlan Wheatley, and then you presented this perspective. And so my thought is, well, no, nothing's changed. I mean, the show has been popular for 3 years, and the bourbon world has changed for 3 years. Like, it's a night and day difference the way the Facebook community operated 3 years ago than it does now. I don't think it's me. I've been having these moments where I want to pull my hair out for 6 years, the entire time I've been on bourbon Facebook world.
Okay.
I mean, the whether or not Jack is bourbon is something that I have constantly struggled with since the beginning of time. So I think it's something, I think it's a new perspective, right? Like, so you're seeing it now when maybe you didn't see it before, so it feels newer.
Well, maybe it's because I wasn't in groups with you that I actually saw your interactions, because where I'm coming from is I remember when I first met you doing the random ask, you know, you asked me to be admin on random ass stupid groups that we were on, or we were admins on different groups, or you were in them. You were pretty quiet and demure and sort of just chill, and you had the little whiskey guy, the little emoji kind, Whiskey Pete guy, but you were pretty chill. You weren't having a whole lot of opinions, which stands to reason that once you get some, you know, you're out there, you get some information and you get some more knowledge and some background, and you do some things, and you're going to have more opinions. It makes sense. But from me seeing that to seeing now, and then seeing you going back and forth with people, and sort of from where I saw it getting snippy, you may not have seen it that way, and that's fine. Maybe that wasn't the way it was meant to be seen, but when it's all in text, it's kind of hard to get context.
Well, so here's the thing. First, I acknowledge that. I think that it's hard to tell sometimes through text, but I try not to speak on something unless I'm wrong. And when I'm wrong, and I learned this from Wade, I know you don't like Wade.
I don't.
But Wade's pretty good about this, that where he'll acknowledge when he's wrong, and he does it so quickly that it just, it goes away.
We'll have to agree to disagree on that, but
say it again.
So we'll have to agree to disagree on him agreeing, him acknowledging when he's wrong, but that's all right.
All right, so I'll give you a different example. You're familiar with Virgin Bourbon?
No.
Oh, okay. So you're familiar with the old Heaven Hill 7-year bottle shape and label?
Yes.
there's a bourbon called Virgin Bourbon that was, it was a black label. You can Google it. It's a similar bottle shape, and it was all 15-year Heaven Hill juice.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about now.
Back in the day, right? So the problem is that the suspicion is that it was heavy, it was a Heaven Hill brand, but it wasn't on Heaven Hill's website. They weren't promoting it. And so someone made the statement that it's owned by Heaven Hill, and I said, well, no, that's not the case. I don't know where you're getting that from. Mm-hmm. And we had a disagreement, and this was probably 2 years ago. And they tracked down the LLC that owned Virgin Bourbon, which was separate from the Heaven Hill brand, but it was the same exact family. So it was essentially a family. It's kind of like Nick Carter and Aaron Carter, right? Like you had one Backstreet Boy, and his little brother also became an artist. And Heaven Hill's family, like, oh, so I ended up, they tracked it down, posted it, and I immediately apologized, and it went away. I'm open to taking in new information, but when I say something, I'm generally trying to say something from a perspective that has been, like, in the case that you mentioned, I said, well, we were talking about, Harlan Wheatley said something, oh, why Buffalo Trace was not on the Bourbon Trail. And this guy disagreed with me, which it turns out he was probably joking, but I couldn't tell right away. And I just was saying that this is not rumor that I'm saying this. I got this directly from Harlan Wheatley on my show, and you took that as me big-timing him. Well, one, I think you maybe think Harlan Wheatley is a bigger celebrity than I think Harlan Wheatley is, but Harlan Wheatley's done a lot of interviews, and I was just trying to say that I got it directly from the source versus hearing it in the bourbon community and running with it. And from my perspective, the example you've given me is we had a disagreement a few months ago about Four Roses, and then you saw me give a citation that Harlan Wheatley told me something directly. So I need more context to acknowledge that you feel like I've changed, but for me it feels like I've just been short-tempered with some people.
Well, that could be, I mean, that could be part of it because I haven't seen it. We've been Speakeasy basically is the only group that we're like pretty active, or we were pretty right. active together.
So I thought about that too. So Jeff Schwartz and you both, neither one of y'all are in HBS.
No.
So if you're not in the Houston Bourbon Society, then your exposure to me has been
limited.
Following me on my personal page or Instagram with the Whiskey P character, or just seeing some of the celebrities I've interviewed. You guys wouldn't be exposed to how deeply I'm involved in either the industry or the community because you're not in that group.
Good
right?
point, yeah.
So if you're all of a sudden seeing more of me, I'm getting a weird dinging sound. Is that you or me?
You. I don't hear it.
Okay. So if all of a sudden you're seeing more of me, it's like, well, is he just getting on his high horse or what? Like, I understand you trying to make sense of it, but what I think is happening is you didn't know that there was a side of me that's been this way this whole time, and now you're just not seeing it versus all of a sudden, I mean...
And when I reached out to you, it was as a friend trying to, like, you know, this is how I saw it. It wasn't like I was trying to be a dick. And
I didn't take it that way.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to be an asshole.
Let me be clear. I disagreed with your assessment, but I didn't take it any other way but with love.
Yeah.
I took it as you were just reaching out to me privately and that you were being helpful, and that's a good thing. It's no different than if my best friend, if we're out in a bar somewhere and he's looking to hit on women and he leans in to tell me something and his breath smells like shit, I'm going to tell him his breath smells like shit because I want him to get laid that night, right? It's not... So I took it as a loving thing, not as a shitty thing. But I didn't agree with the assessment. But not because of anything, you know, malintentioned.
I can agree with it. I mean, that's understandable that I haven't had that much interaction with you. So when I see you multiple times in a short period on Speakeasy going like that, then it's like, I sort of get that impression that it's, so I reach out like, hey, this isn't the guy I know. This isn't the guy that I've been involved with, but I haven't seen you, haven't interacted with you in a while. So maybe that is.
Well, one of the things we started doing on my show is having more bourbon roundtables. Mm. Which is definitely inspired by what Ryan and Kenny has done. But the conversation with the bourbon community from across the U.S. makes for good conversation. So the bourbon junkies are a part of that. I'd love to have you come on the show soon. And maybe in the next week or two, because I know it's coming up for the monthly thing. But to have that conversation, you know, face-to-face. We normally do a Zoom type thing where we videotape it and we have subjects to discuss. And if you've got some flamboyant opinions and if you want to tell me that I'm being a dick or that I'm wrong about something, that would be a good place to do it.
All right. Let me know. But we're at like an hour and 45 minutes, so I'm going to cut it off. Normally I ask the guests if they have any questions for me. I mean, do you have any questions for me?
I don't have any big questions. Okay. I'll say this. I think you're a really good guy, and I'd love to talk more. I think we've been in each other's circle for quite some time, but haven't engaged enough to really, you know, I don't know if you remember this or not, but I think you might have started BRM. I think there was a group that you started as a joke and made me an admin, and then I think that group went on to become the Bourbon Reasonable Magistrate.
Why did you have to bring that up? I try to let that die. I'm going to have to cut this from the podcast.
All right, man. All right, we'll talk soon. I appreciate you reaching out to me and, of course, talking to me for an hour and a half.
All right, man. I appreciate you coming on, Chris. Have a good weekend. Bye. All right, until next time, enjoy your pours and enjoy your family.